I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
The Southern Poverty Law Center themselves advertise to raise money to dismantle violent extremist groups for a period of at least a decade. They use their donor network to raise money to purportedly dismantle violent extremist groups. However, the SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, used the money they raised from their donor network to actually pay the leadership of these very groups. I just want to say that again. They used the fraudulently raised money by lying to their donor network, thousands of Americans, to go ahead and actually pay the leadership of these supposed violent extremist groups. The groups, as the general laid out, include the Ku Klux Klan, the United Klans of America, Unite to Right, National Alliance, the National Socialist Movement, the Aryan Nation Motorcycle Club, and the National Socialist Party of America, and also the American Front. In at least one of these matters, our investigation revealed that funds were used to facilitate the commission of further state and federal offenses, totaling over $3 million.
$3 million may not sound like a lot, considering all the billions have been defrauded from the American people. But here we have a group that claims it is going to help fight for justice and go against injustice, and the KKK would certainly qualify as one of those, the Aryan Nation the same. And they were getting people to contribute, and then according to the allegations by A.J. Patel and others in their new Department of Justice filing, the far-left Southern Poverty Law Center was money laundering and getting and giving money to leaders of these various groups that they supposedly were trying to dismantle. Why? Well, there are a lot of questions around that. You had to have a boogeyman to fight. Maybe they wanted to make sure they could fight, and therefore we could raise more money. And we could also funnel money through in other ways as well. The full investigation will break it all wide open, but just this allegation from Kash Patel on the Department of Justice and this major indictment against them, it's an 11-count indictment. Secretly funneling $3 million in donor funds to leaders and affiliates of extremist groups that it claimed that it opposed. We'll break it down for you. Welcome to hour number two, Larry Connors, USA, April 22nd, 2026. And with Larry Connors, USA, you're going to get news, analysis, commentary, and education. You will leave each hour with more information than you have right now. I'm not on here just to bluster and fluster and puff myself up. I'm here to deliver you information, insight, and education. You don't have to agree with me on everything, but you're going to walk away with more knowledge than you have right now. I say that at the beginning of every hour, and it's a fact. You have a question about that? Well, check it out. Follow and just see how much you learn. And one of the things you're going to learn later, the DEI programs, they're supposedly wiped out and disappearing, are they not? No. Not so fast, Bubba. You know how a butterfly is born, do you not? Of course, I'm sure many of you do. It's a worm, then spins a cocoon, and then emerges a beautiful butterfly. That's what DEI has been doing at various institutions, going into a cocoon, emerging not as a beautiful butterfly, an ugly butterfly if it's going to be one, but more likely a vulture, still trying to prey upon those who believe DEI is gone. It is not. It's just morphed into something else. My guest will break it down for you coming up a little bit later. Now, more on the ACLU charges. As I said, this is an 11-count federal case, including wire fraud, bank fraud, conspiracy to commit money laundering. Those are major charges leveled against the ACLU and its membership leadership. The story is exploding, not just because of Larry Connors USA saying it, or even Patel. It's being spread across the New York Times, NPR, National Public Broadcast. They can't ignore it. Obviously, Fox News, Politico, a leftist leaning, and other. They're all raising questions about how hate watchdog groups would operate, the reliability of their designations, potential impacts on free speech and public trust, patterns of, quote, financial deception that echo broader issues of lawfare, propaganda, and institutional corruption. That's as it's defined in a piece I pulled up regarding this lawsuit. How can they say we're going to get rid of the KKK and the Aryan Nations, give us your money, and then they turn around and give some of that money to the leadership of the KKK and others? Kash Patel continues.
Our investigation revealed that the Southern Poverty Law Center, on top of perpetuating this widespread, decade-long, multi-million-dollar fraud, conducted more criminal activity. They attempted to hide their criminal activity from our financial banking network. They set up shell companies and entities around America so that the financial institutions that we rely on as everyday Americans were deceived in believing that money was not coming from the Southern Poverty Law Center in the perpetration of this scheme and fraud, but rather fictitious entities they stood up to perpetuate this ongoing fraud. This is a serious and egregious violation of a group that purported to dismantle violent extremist groups, but in turn actually only fueled the hatred. This is an important case brought by the president, by President Trump's administration. We're thankful to the president for his leadership and funding of not just the FBI and DOJ, but his commitment to go out there and wipe out fraud and conspiracy and waste and abuse wherever it occurs, including the Southern Poverty Law Center. Even though this money was made to appear to be coming from legitimate people and legitimate entities, we at the FBI, with our great partners at the Department of Justice and in the state of Alabama, were able to comb through a decade worth of material, a scheme that took a decade to build, so that we were able to follow the money, because money never lies.
Yeah.
And they got caught.
And when you set up shell companies, you immediately raise red flags. He mentioned the state of Alabama. All these indictments are coming from an Alabama grand jury. The 11 counts of wire fraud, false statements to a federally insured bank, conspiracy to commit concealment money laundering. And it points out in the indictment, starting in the 1980s, the Southern Poverty Law Center began operating a covert network of individuals either associated with violent and extremist groups such as the KKK or others, feeding them money to cause mayhem and chaos so then they can go out and say, look, we need more money to fight them. This is the bad firefighter that sets a fire just so he can be part of a rescue team to put out the fire. And in some cases, people die. This is anyone pretending to be a hero because they set up a dilemma where they can rush in and be the hero. As you know, we're looking at a new Fed chair candidate, Kevin Warsh. Yes, Warsh. I'm not mispronouncing W-A-S-H. It is Warsh. Well, he was asked during his hearing about what would you consider, how would you define stable prices?
My preferred definition of stable prices is a little different than most academics. I believe that price stability should be a change in prices such that no one's talking about it. That's an old-fashioned definition, but I think it's still valid. And the sooner that we can reform the institution with my colleagues, if confirmed, the sooner we can ensure price stability, and we can have a new set of leaders atop the institution with high, credible, ethical standards to return the Fed to what it should be. The independence that both Chairman Scott and Senator Warren mentioned, critically important. But independence has to be earned. And it's earned by delivering on the promises, the commitments that the Fed has made. And as the Fed hasn't delivered on those promises, we shouldn't be surprised that we hear politics that are entering the room at the Fed. We need to get the politics out of it so the Fed can focus on its day job, deliver on full employment and stable prices.
You heard Kevin Warsh refer to Senator Warren because she was part of the committee he was appearing in front of. And she had a question. She was sure, this is a gotcha question. I will get you on this question. It did not go the way she wanted.
In one aspect of President Trump's economic agenda with which you disagree.
Well, Senator, the Federal Reserve in recent years has wandered outside of its remit, wandered into other areas.
I'm asking for something. That's not something I'm prepared to do. Donald Trump on.
If I'm confirmed, the Federal Reserve should stay in its lane.
Just one little place where you disagree with Donald Trump.
Well, I do have a disagreement, actually, Senator, with the president. I think even this morning, he said that he thought I was out of central casting. I think central casting, I'd look older, grayer, maybe show up here with a cigar of sorts.
Quite adorable.
Quite adorable.
You know, we need a Fed chair who is independent. That's the only way we preserve the independence of the Federal Reserve. If you can't answer these questions, you don't have the courage and you don't have the independence.
Uh-huh. She's going to make that declaration. Jury and judge. Fohannes Warren. What a great piece of credibility, right? I'm of Indian descent. American Indian descent. No. And you want to stand there and question someone else about their credibility? Do you remember the Obama hand involved in the Russian collusion hoax? Jason Meiser, a Trump advisor, lays it out for you again.
I hate to say this, but President Barack Obama, there is now incontrovertible evidence that he was the spearhead of a seditious conspiracy to subvert the will of the American people and overthrow the United States government back in 2016. We must, absolutely must, hold every one of these criminals accountable for the crimes that they committed. They are the most heinous crimes committed in American history. James Comey, John Brennan, Clapper, Rice, Biden was in the meeting in July 28th in the Oval Office. They briefed Barack Obama on Hillary Clinton's plan to, quote, tie Trump to Russia collusion lies. It consumed our national discourse for 5 years. It undermined a sitting duly elected president. It sabotaged administration. It framed a three-star general. It destroyed and ripped this country apart. We had a constitutional crisis, the likes of which I don't think any American can fully comprehend. It is atrocious. And every single one of them must be held accountable.
Now, in the previous hour, in case you missed it, we're talking about the death of Richard Nixon on this date. And, of course, we had to cover the Watergate issue. And Democrat McGovern railed against Nixon as saying, how dare you? You should have, when people came in and suggesting what they were going to do to burglarize and Watergate, everything, you should have said, get out of my office. This is the office of the presidency. And called them out. Well, here's a meeting that took place with Obama in the Oval Office, as you heard, involving James Comey, FBI director at the time, John Brennan, Clapper, Rice, Vice President Biden, and others. They all briefed him, said the Russian hoax is a hoax set up by Hillary. And Obama did nothing to throw them out and say, we must put a stop to it and quit spreading the lies. We must say it is what it is, a political tricks campaign. But he didn't. And among those in that meeting, as I said, was John Brennan. And now John Brennan, oh, he's crying tears and crying uncle.
It just shows that over the past 10 years, there's been, you know, failure after failure to try to identify something that, you know, wrongdoing in this case. But, you know, part of this is to harass, to try to hurt individuals reputationally, professionally, financially, trying to keep the story alive as a way to deflect from other issues and challenges that they face. So, again, I'm not surprised by this. I'm very dismayed and disappointed by it. I'm also very troubled that we have people in government who seem to be so mean-spirited that they try to actually to hurt individuals, hurt people, their families, and others. You know, and they claim to be part of the Republican Party. This is not the Republican Party that I work with or that you worked with. You know, there are people of integrity who never would have thought the Department of Justice would have fallen as far as it has. And so, again, every day when I wake up, you know, there's something new that I just find just being so surreal and separated from the government and the reality that I worked in for 33 plus years. But again, I take every day as it comes.
That's John Brennan, former CIA director, who was inside that office. He, along with Clapper, telling Obama Russian ties to Trump, all a hoax, a dirty tricks campaign by Hillary. The Steele dossier, all fake. And they were destroying lives. General Flynn, his life. Rudy Giuliani, they took him apart. And others that they tried to. And some will never really be able to recoup what they lost. But now John Brennan's on the other end of it. And I said, oh, this is so shameful. It's just wrong. It shouldn't happen. You started it. You started it. And you took part in it. And you had no problem at that time. Even though it was, as you said, ripping the country apart. Well, no, actually, he didn't say that. He didn't say that. But that's what it was doing. They thought they were doing everything that should be done to make sure that Trump could not survive his presidency, to oust a duly elected president. Again, the statement you were listening to from Jason Meiser, a Trump advisor, said, they briefed Barack Obama on Hillary Clinton's plan to tie Trump to Russia, collusion lies, and it consumed our national discourse for 5 years. Undermined a sitting, duly elected president. Sabotage an administration. It did all of that. And John Brennan, despite your cries of tears and crying uncle now, you were an instrument directly involved in it. Shame on you. You should spend time behind bars. All right, what about our DEI programs? They're not gone. You might think so, but they're not. My guests will explain how. Lock and load. Ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Spring weather has everyone sneezing, even inside their home or building. Instead of saying Gesundheit, call Wellington Environmental to perform air tests to determine if mold levels are too high. Gesundheit is the same as saying bless you after someone sneezes, the German word meaning wishing you good health. Wellington Environmental can perform air testing that is simple, fast, and can identify issues keeping you from having good health. Wellington does the same for hospitals and nursing homes for indoor concerns. Give them a call. It's simple. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Tell Cindy, I need air sampling. They've seen it all. They can help you. Next time you hear Gesundheit, think Wellington, Wellington Environmental. Be well with Wellington. McGuire Moving is silver certified, which means they are great at relocating senior citizens. In fact, McGuire is a household name because McGuire understands the stress involved when moving older adults. So if you or family members need help moving, I highly recommend McGuire Moving. 314-241-0600. 241-0600. Get a free in-home estimate. McGuireMoving.com. John Beal Roofing reminds you we are in the stormy season, and that means if you have even the smallest leak in your roof, you could soon have a much bigger issue. Call the John Bill to make sure that your biggest investment is protected. That call can save you major dollars. If you do get hit during a storm, John Bill has a rapid response team. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 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 John Bill. So many times, Vincent's Jewelers has helped me surprise someone special. Vincent's locally owned can do the same for you, and you don't have to break the bank to get something really nice, maybe even customized. The smile you're going to get back from that special someone, priceless. Check Vincent'sJewelers.com every day because new items are arriving and there are special deals. Vincent's, my only jeweler. Vincent'sJewelers.com. Vincent'sJewelers.com.
This is News Talk STL.
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
You know that we've been told that DEI has gone away. The University of Michigan, back in March of 2025, loudly proclaimed it would eliminate all the DEI programs and get rid of them. Well, my guest is going to tell you that a large share of the DEI personnel are simply still employed, and total spending on all these positions has increased year over year. The offices and positions have been rebranded rather than eliminated. Tim Minella, Director of Higher Education for the Goldwater Institute. Tim, welcome aboard.
Hi, Larry. Thank you so much for having me.
So let's break this down. I see that you put out an analysis of the Michigan DEI program and pointing out that despite saying they got rid of all of it, they lied to us. I'm surprised.
Yeah, well, I'm not too surprised about it, unfortunately. Michigan, perhaps, was the most prominent university who went all in on DEI. They spent $250 million on DEI. They employed over 160 individuals to work on DEI throughout the university. By their own measures, their own studies that they did, this was a failure. Students after these programs were less likely to interact with people who were not of their same race or religion. People felt less included in campus life than before these programs. Utter failure. So they made a big deal about how we're getting rid of it. We've seen the light. A new report from Mark Perry, an economist, former professor at University of Michigan Flint, shows that they basically just swept this under the rug. It's still going on. There are still hundreds of people being employed in DEI throughout the university, and it points to the need for some serious reforms here to get this right.
And in fact, he's pointing out 84% of the Michigan DEI staff for 2025 are still at the university.
That's correct. And what he points out is that is not out of line with the typical turnover of staff at universities. So it really doesn't point to any intentional cutting of DEI staff or positions at all. It just reflects regular turnover in the university. And so they really have not done anything. They put out a press release, basically. They said they were going to do the right thing, and they really have not followed through whatsoever.
Well, I've always had a problem with the DEI statement, diversity, equity, and inclusion, because inclusion is generally not inclusion if you don't belong and accept DEI other policies. And in fact, one of the Speech First reports, a study, as you're well aware of, said 67% of major universities required students take DEI courses if they want to graduate.
That's right. In 2024, I believe Speech First came out with a report on hundreds of major American universities, finding that, as you said, two-thirds of them required DEI courses in order to graduate. So if you want to be an accountant, you want to be a biologist, you're going to have to go through this training in order to get your degree. That is particularly unacceptable at a public university that should not be promoting this discriminatory ideology and pushing it and through the required curriculum. So it's very important that states across the country adopt Goldwater's Freedom from Indoctrination Act, which we've put out, which gets rid of mandatory DEI in the curriculum. It's extremely important because if you get rid of the DEI offices and DEI positions, that's the right thing to do. But it doesn't handle DEI throughout the university in the classroom that people are forced to go through if they want a degree.
So riddle me this. Why would Michigan make this proclamation that we're going to eliminate all this and yet continue to sweep it under the rug and rebrand it, rename it? What's at stake other than just saying we still have DEI? What are they trying to hold on to?
Well, I think there's a number of things. I think the reason they put out the statement, frankly, is they were afraid that the Trump administration and the anti-discrimination part of the federal government, which is finally enforcing discrimination law in an even-handed manner, they were afraid of getting held accountable by the administration that way. But your larger question, I would say there's a lot of true believers here. There's a lot of true believers on college campuses, high up in positions on college campuses, that believe this is how we make the world a better place.
Yeah.
And they're free to think that. They're free to advocate for this ideology as private citizens. They should not be allowed to indoctrinate students using their positions of power at public universities, which should serve all the citizens of that state, not just the liberal slice of it.
But the other side, the other issue which you did not mention in the, as to why they're defending it and continuing it in the dark, has a dollar sign attached to it.
Yes, absolutely. There are a number of foundations, for instance. There was a very important report recently on the Mellon Foundation, a private so-called philanthropic organization that is pushing out numerous DEI grants for research, for academic research on these subjects, subjects like systemic oppression and the like. And it's really underrated, I think, the extent to which these private foundations that are giving out a lot of money are shaping these campuses, because as you indicate, it often comes down to dollar signs. And if this is a way for scholars to get some money in their pockets, they're going to push it. They're going to come up with programs to push it. And that's what we see on campuses.
And it's not just federal dollars. It's getting donors who are alike mind to go with DEI.
That's correct.
Correct? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Now,
yeah.
The Goldwater Institute's, you mentioned the American Higher Education Restoration Act, would do exactly what?
So what we've found through research we've done is, quite frankly, there's a lot of bogus research that academics on college campuses do. A big part of their jobs is not just teaching. That's the part everybody thinks about. But half or more of their time typically is spent on research, on doing research in their field that's supposed to seek the truth, that's supposed to advance their discipline. We've found in various ways that a lot of this research is, quite frankly, highly partisan, highly politicized, and taxpayers should not be on the hook for it. They should not be on the hook for research that looks indistinguishable from something put out by a leftist think tank. And so our model policy here, the Restoration Act, says bring some accountability to this process, saying we're not just going to automatically fund your pet project. You're going to have to get approval for this project to make sure it is a legitimate academic subject that you are pursuing, not just an excuse for activism in social justice.
In our last couple of minutes, you're listening to Tim Minella, Director of Higher Education for the Goldwater Institute. You point out that these courses, as you were saying earlier, there are a lot of different ways they apply things and make it. You mentioned lectures that might involve microaggressions, intersectionality, and whitenesses. That's all part of your academic classes.
Yeah, all those subjects that you mentioned, this is part of the indoctrination process on these campuses. Like we've talked about, many schools require you to take courses in these subjects in order to receive your degree. And it doesn't matter if you want to avoid them by being a biology major or an accounting major.
Right.
They often require you to take it, even though the subject pretty much nothing to do with your field. And so that's what we need to address. Students should not have to sit through DEI indoctrination sessions just to graduate from a public university.
No. But, of course, in the biology, they're going to learn that you can be a boy and become a woman, and a woman and become – never mind. Not going down that rabbit hole, doesn't have the time. Tim, I want to thank you very much for your time today. I'd like to talk to you again in the future.
Really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You bet. Tim Minella, Executive Director for the Goldwater Institute Higher Education Division. There was a report in 2025, let me get it back here in front of me, by Defending Education that showed 245 universities still had DEI offices or programs. 245. And 29 trying to hide it by renaming them with vague terms such as access, belonging, community, kumbaya, fire camp cookout songs. Anything but DEI. And yet that's exactly what they're doing. They are warping our children's minds and putting them loose on the world. Coming up, the latest with Iran. Stand by, please.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at LarryConnersUSA.
When insurance companies know you're represented by Under Law, they know Under is not going to let you be pushed around. Their reputation is built on years of courtroom battles. If you suffer an injury or damage to your property, serve the insurance company notice. You have Under Law on your side, a St. Louis firm you can trust to protect you at every term. Don't settle for less. You want to win? Believe me, Under wins. Under, O-N-D-E-R, underlaw.com. McGuire Moving is silver certified, which means they are great at relocating senior citizens. In fact, McGuire is a household name because McGuire understands the stress involved when moving older adults. So if you or family members need help moving, I highly recommend McGuire Moving. 314-241-0600. 241-0600. Get a free in-home estimate. McGuireMoving.com. When I have business clients or guests from out of town, I often take them to Cafe Napoli. I know they're going to enjoy any of the Napoli locations. Cafe Napoli in Clayton, Napoli 2 in Town and Country, Napoli 3 in St. Charles, next to Napoli C, Napoli Kirkwood, or Napoli Brothers Pizza and Pasta in the Chesterfield Valley. Excellent food and intellectual conversation. If they bring the intellectual conversation. NapoliSTL.com. NapoliSTL.com. You should know that when I endorse Wellington Environmental, it's because I believe and know they will do you right. Wellington takes pride in providing homeowners and businesses whatever they need. You need some dustless blasting? They will take care of that. You need some mold radiation? They can do that. They take pride in training their team to perform multiple services and having the equipment ready to get jobs finished. That's important to you. You make just one call, and you call a company that's been around for more than 35 years with more than 45 technicians in the field. Most of you know finding good workers, then having them show up on time could be difficult. Not for Wellington Environmental. They're there at the designated time, ready to go. Check them out to see what they could do for you. Dustless blasting or anything else you need. Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. 314-644-4930. Be well with Wellington.
This is News Talk STL. This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
The UK Maritime Trade Operations reports two ships were attacked today, and there's reportedly a third. And this all comes after that extended ceasefire last night. The UK reports that first attack happened on a container ship around 4 a.m. local time, 15 nautical miles northeast of Oman. The UK says an IRGC gunboat caused heavy damage to the ship's bridge. About 2.5 hours later, the second cargo ship was fired at off the coast of Iran. The ship has stopped in the water. No reported damage to that vessel. Now, Iranian state media claims Iran attacked a third ship and has seized two of these vessels.
And it's really hard to tell what Iran is doing or not doing and who's speaking on behalf of Iran. The IRGC basically has said the Iranian president no longer has a voice. They've got the guns. I guess they can back it up. And yet Trump has agreed to extend the ceasefire with Iran because he says Pakistan asked for it, saying, I think we can make a deal. Give us a little bit more time. And the Trump envoy to Turkey doubling down, saying we are trying to have peace through strength policy without firing more weapons and maybe killing innocents. Trump is trying to have peace. I don't like the fact that we continue to back up and back up, but we're going to have reach a breakpoint where we're not going to. And he'd said the other day, we can destroy every industrial facility, every oil terminal facility, every bridge in Iran within an hour. I have no doubt we can. They don't have anything to stop us other than talk and talk. And you know damn well, while they're in there talking, they're building and reconstructing and starting over best they can. The ship the other day, the container ship that the U.S. had stopped trying to go through the blockade, some reports came out. I haven't seen verification, but I saw enough to make me think, yeah, but that's probably true. It was bringing drones and ballistic missile capabilities from China to Iran. And China relies on the oil from Iran. 20% of the world's exported oil and gas goes through the Strait of Hormuz. And it is the strait, singular, not straits, the Strait of Hormuz. And out of that 20%, 80%+ goes to China. According to the White House, this new extended ceasefire with Iran will last only 3, maybe 5 days. If they're telling me 3 to 5 days, my bet would say it's going to come to an end before that fifth day, unless there's something major, major, major that they agree on the Iranian side. And they're not going to. They're stalling for time. They're not going to refuse to build more ballistic missiles, and they're not going to give up their desire to have a nuclear weapon. And that's what is at stake. I'm looking at headlines from various leftist news agencies, gas prices going up again. Going up is going to be a big concern for midterm. And other costs, it might well be. But my bigger concern, and I would think it would be yours, if Iran had a nuclear weapon, what would they do? They don't have one, and look what they have done. They've killed thousands of Americans, including soldiers. Beirut bombing, directly traced back to Iran, and other cases. And the Gulf State nations don't want Iran to have a nuclear weapon. And certainly Israel doesn't. Trump had made this statement.
We've taken out their leaders, frankly, which does complicate things in one way, but these leaders are much more rational. It is regime change, no matter what you want to call it, which is not something I said I was going to do, but I've done it, indirectly maybe, but I've done it.
And then Iran's foreign minister, the new guy, he said that blockading Iranian ports is an act of war and thus a violation of the ceasefire. Striking a commercial vessel and taking its crew hostage is an even greater violation. Iran knows how to neutralize restrictions, how to defend its interests, and how to resist bullying. Do you think they were trying to show that with what they did overnight in the Strait?
I do, Dana. I think that it demonstrates that they're not ready. Iran is not ready to negotiate, and they may not even be in a position to negotiate. They may not have the consolidation of power across the parliament, the IRGC, and the mullahs to get into some kind of negotiation. I'm also not sure that President Trump is 100% accurate in saying that these new leaders are more rational. I think Mujtaba Khomeini, Vahidi, the new IRGC commander, these are our hardliners. They may not be as rational as we're thinking they are.
That's Joe Bacino, former CENTCOM commander. I tend to agree, and you can take Trump's words with a grain of salt, saying maybe trying to placate them to say, well, we expect them to be more reasonable and likely. And he's saying, no, I don't think they are. I think they're still hard line. I think he's correct. I don't know if Trump is. I don't think he's under the illusion that they are going to be more pliable. But maybe he just wants to present that on the surface, because he's also made it very clear. If this ceasefire ends without a deal, we will eliminate the Iranian energy and transportation infrastructure. Iran could become a mecca for tourists in the future and have all kinds of wealth. They could revert back to what they were in 1979, the most Western nation in the Middle East. Until, as you heard Bocino refer to them, the mullahs took over. I don't know which is correct. Mullahs. I got other names for them as well. But I like him calling them mullah. It reminds me of a bunch of cattle. Mullah. We don't know what we're doing, and we're just out here chomping and regurgitating into our stomachs and plopping, you know what, here and there. Only what they drop is dangerous to us. In the meantime, there's a story from CNN that the European nations are confronting the economic damage of the war with Iran. The European bloc now creating a body to coordinate, fuel sharing or any release of emergency stockpile. Which nation do you think is going to get the most of any fuel that is going to be shared? That's where they're going to find out. No, we're not all so common, are we? We're all going to have our own needs. They got themselves into this. You remember how? Reagan actively worked to prevent the European nations, Western Europe, from relying on Soviet Russian fuel. In 1981, he imposed sanctions to block the construction of a major Siberian pipeline, warning it would provide the Soviet Union with undue economic and political leverage. So he fought against that, and he warned the European nations, do not depend upon Moscow for your fuel. That's what they've been doing lately. But now they're going to have to try to re-coordinate how we're going to get unhooked from the Russian gas. And who over there is reminding them, didn't we hear this from that President Reagan actor guy at one point and we ignored it? And now the new president TV host guy is saying you got yourself into this. They're not taking responsibility, obviously. But the fact that they're saying that they're going to form a block to decide how the supplies are going to be distributed as it gets smaller and smaller, oh, that's going to get nasty. They're already sharpening the knives, believe me. Well, to the Virginia gerrymandering story. It did win for the Democrats at the polls, narrowly. But will it survive the courts?
Number one, the vote was actually surprising in the sense that it was this close. Mm. I mean, the midterms have not gone well for Republicans. They have underperformed everywhere in the country. And here they overperformed. And I think it shows that a lot of voters in Virginia, particularly those in the middle, were really unhappy with this and thought this was, in fact, what it was, a partisan gerrymandering. I heard so many complaints yesterday when people actually read the language saying that this is about fairness. In elections, on the ballot. I mean, the actual ballot measure calls this fairness in elections. I mean, it was a complete partisan job by the part of the Democrats, and it barely squeaked by in a fairly blue state. So there's actually hope for that. The other issue is what the courts are going to do with this. There are several legitimate legal challenges that are going to be heard next week in the Virginia Supreme Court, which tilts a little Republican. So there's actually a chance here that the process by which they got this ballot measure on the ballot could be overturned and the results of the election be nullified.
Now, what about this fairness on the ballot wording? I want to address that specifically in a moment. But that was Rick Santorum, former Pennsylvania senator and also Republican advisor now. And he says it, considering it barely got passed, how close was it? 51.4% said, yes, we want this new gerrymandering for, quote, fairness. 48.6% said no. The idea was to take 11 seats in the House of Representatives that the state of Virginia gets and maybe redraw the lines and make it fair. I guess you could say it was fair. In the previous, it had, out of those 11 seats, 6 were Democrat districts, 5 Republican districts. The, quote, fairness decision gives 1 seat to Republicans, the other 10 to Democrats. What in the hell is fair about that? Yet Hakeem Jeffries says, this is the road we're on and we're going to plow it all the way through.
House Democrats will continue to fight one battle after another on behalf of the American people. We're battling them on the economy, battling them on tariffs, battling them on health care, battling them on nutritional assistance, battling them on ICE funding, battling them on Donald Trump's reckless and costly war of choice, and battling them on their gerrymandering scheme. Last night was a big victory for the people of Virginia, a big victory for America, and a big victory for democracy.
He can say all of that. Florida is now likely to retaliate with his own new partisan redistricting map. And, of course, the vote is passed by the voters in Virginia will be going to the courts for an appeal because they weren't given true language. Let me point this out first to you. Virginia Governor Spanberger, gloating, saying, look what we've done. But keep in mind, when she says Virginia voters have spoken, it was very narrow. I told you the numbers. 51.4% yes, 48.6% no. There was no mandate here. So we'll be challenged by the courts and probably could go to the U.S. Supreme Court before we get around to the midterm elections. But Spanberger, when she came in, she said, I have no plans to redistrict Virginia. That is what she said. Oh, but that's a Democrat talking. That was out of one side of her mouth. The other side gloating and saying, look what we've done, we're going to do it more. And how fair was the ballot language? Let me read to you what the voters were seeing in front of them when they went to the polls. Talking about confusion, much less lying. The question, should the Constitution of Virginia be amended to allow the General Assembly to temporarily adopt new congressional districts to restore fairness in the upcoming elections? Fairness. 11 congressional districts, 6 held by Democrats at this point, 5 held by Republicans, and now with this vote, only one district will be held by a Republican and the rest Democrats. That issue about restore fairness, that's going to be the point of contention going to any legal battle. I'm not a lawyer. I don't pretend to be one. I'm not a bookie. I don't pretend to be one. But I can tell you on my betting, I'd say it ain't going to work. It's not going to pass the smell test. Hey, let me take a moment to tell you, as you know, Vincent's Jewelers is one of our sponsors. I'll make that very clear to you. I went in to see Leo at Vincent's yesterday. I'm having a personalized item they're going to make for me. But he showed me what they're offering, which is a great idea. Mother's Day is coming up, and they're encouraging parents or grandparents, bring your child to Vincent's Jewelers on Olive and let them pick out a gift for mom. Their gifts available as low as $25. Earrings, things of that nature. So your child can then get that gift, and when they give it to mom, it's not just a card they drew, it's a gift, and they say, mom, I got this for you, even if they didn't pay for it. Think of how important that will be for them and their mothers and the lasting memories that will come with it. Vincent's Jewelers, of course, my only jeweler. I do want you to encourage you to take your child in there, make memories. We'll be back tomorrow at 6, and remember our pledge, one nation under God.
You can follow Larry on Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.